Hello everyone, welcome to Darren Matthews and Sometimes Friends, the podcast where I speak to people much more interesting than myself. Please enjoy. Okay everyone, welcome to this week's edition of the podcast, Darren Matthews and Sometimes Friends, where I talk to people who are much more interesting than myself. This week I'm joined by a man who I met many years ago doing stand-up, who is now a published author. I'm going to call it that one. And
oh, yeah.
You're also, we're going to make the sound more posh as well. Is the pronunciation a luthier?
I'm a luthier.
A luthier, sorry.
Yeah.
Or a luthier, if you're from Dublin like you are.
A luthier.
Lovely.
I think it comes from lutes, from making lutes.
Yeah, I did look and it said it was from a French word, so yeah. I probably could have just mispronounced it, but in a French accent, it would have sounded better. That's all right. Yeah, you've kind of gone the opposite way that most Irish lads go. Most boys like start using their hands on the tools, and then when they're about 35, their back's fucked, the knees are gone, and they're like, I'm getting a job in an office. You went the opposite way completely.
It's very odd. I've never really been very hands-on. My dad has always been very hands-on. He was a heating engineer, plumber, heating engineer, and so he would do everything, you know, knew about how to make, you know, it's just like, no, I'll make one of those, and he has all the tools and stuff, and I was never all that interested in it, doing anything like that. I think it was about 18 months ago now, the cartoon that I do with the comic that I do with Sophie Hodge, this thing called The Life of Sharks, and it kind of took off, got popular, and people were saying, oh, I'd love this on a t-shirt, I'd like this on a mug, I'd like this sort of stuff. And we were like, Jesus, we could. Because at this stage, comedy wasn't paying, as it doesn't.
I was going to say, what do you mean at this stage? At what point does it start paying?
I don't think it ever does. I think basically you're always just covering your costs, you know, with the hope of maybe making it big. And it just doesn't happen. So I thought to myself, this seems like a very interesting way to go. And so I started to look on YouTube and stuff like that about how to do screen printing and that sort of thing. You know, how to make t-shirts, how to make mugs and all that sort of stuff. And I bought myself like a secondhand heat press, which is, you know, you get a sublimation printer. God, it's going to be terribly boring, guys. But anyway, listen up. You get sublimation ink in a printer, and you print out onto a piece of paper, and then you heat press it onto a polyester t-shirt, and you get your design on it. And you do the same with mugs. You get a mug press, which you print onto the paper, you tape the paper to the side of the mug, stick it in the heat press, you leave it in there for about 3 minutes, and your design gets heated onto the side of the mug. And so I looked up how to do all this. And I thought, this is great. I know how to do this. But you can only sublimate onto polyester t-shirts. All polyester. People were going, oh, can you get cotton t-shirts? You get cotton t-shirts. And I was like, oh, well, I'll maybe see how you do that. And the way you do that is with screen printing. So I looked up YouTube videos about that and how to make your own screen. I made my own screen press. Never done anything like that before in my life. Never. I swear to Christ, I didn't own any tools.
Did you have to go buy the tools to build the stuff?
I had to go buy the tools. And then, like, you know what I mean? I wasn't used to going into DIY places. Do you know what I mean? I went into Newcastle, into the builder's merchants. And you go in and go, like, some wood, please. And they're like, what do you want? And I'm like, I don't fucking know. I want to do this, and they're looking at you like, because they're used to builders coming in like, just yeah, like, where you want to be, where, yeah, right.
2x4s, lathes,
doing a
joist in the house.
Yeah, they all have all the lingo and all the rest of it, and they just grunted each other.
Yeah,
and they looked at me like I had a fucking 10 heads. So I eventually worked out what to buy to make the screen press, and with the hinges and the screws and all the rest of it. And I made it, and it worked. It actually worked. I started to make my own screens as well. So I would buy the mesh for the screens and glue that up, you know, stretch it and glue it on to make the screens. So that was all, you know, it took me a while to learn how to do that, to be honest.
And weirdly enough, that was all initially just to add to The Life of Sharks.
Yeah, but I got interested in it. it was to add to the life of sharks so we could do more, so we could make t-shirts and sell them. Because I mean, we were selling things through Redbubble, this thing on, you know, and we were making maybe a pound, like there's the two of us, so it's Sophie and me, so we split everything 50-50. So if we sold a t-shirt, we might get £2 out of it each.
And the t-shirt's like, 20 quid?
And the t-shirt's 20 quid, and I was like, fuck that. We can do better than that. So started screen printing, and it took a while. I'm not gonna say it was easy. You know, learning how to make all that stuff and screen. If I had to do it all again, I would just go and buy the screens. Do all that. But I learned a lot being able to make a screen and glue it and make a joint and, you know, glue it together and do all that. That sort of got me making stuff. Then I made my own workbenches for the garage out of wood and jigsaw, and they weren't terrible. I mean, they weren't great, but they aren't terrible. They're still there, they're still fine, and they're level, and so they don't.
As long as you can put a spirit level on it, it doesn't matter if it sits that way. As long as the top bit sits that way, you should be okay.
Sits that way, you're grand.
yeah. If it's flat and you're not, yeah. If you put a screwdriver down, it doesn't roll off on you. You're doing all right. Yeah.
That's a spot on. Then it's like, yeah, it's not all over the place.
Weirdly enough, I spent a couple of years working on building sites, but I was never the construction. I was always the laborer, and I always had this kind of guilt because, like you, my dad can do anything with his hands. The guy left school when he was 12. He had to be, so he can fucking build anything. And he was a welder. Jesus, he could do a bit of bricklaying, whatever needed doing. I think that's it feels like very much a dying art or a dying generation where I have that shame where I have to phone somebody. Well, thankfully, I've got three brothers and two of them know what the fuck they're at. I'm like, can you come and fix this for me, please?
You get braver at stuff like that. I mean, that's the thing. You just do it. I remember I was talking to my dad about it and he was like, you just fucking do it. Just have a go and you mess it up and then you have another go and you get better at it. It's like my dad can lay bricks. My dad can weld as well. My dad can do all that sort of stuff.
None of those are in his official trade set. Like,
no, but he can do them. I mean, he doesn't do them anymore. God, he's in his 70s now. Yeah. He doesn't do anything really. But he used to be able to do all of that. And now you can basically learn how to do anything on YouTube. I'm pretty sure if you wanted to become a fucking heart surgeon, there would be YouTube how-to videos on it. I mean, I've literally been able to learn how to do everything on just by watching YouTube.
Yeah.
So I made all this sort of stuff first. For the workbenches and the screen presses and all that sort of stuff, and. There was one day that I was watching a YouTube video about how to screen print. You know, it's about doing, you know, putting the emulsion on the screens. You have to coat the screens, you have to let them dry, then you have to burn, you have to make a transparency and put it on, then you burn the screen out with a lamp and all this sort of stuff. So I was learning how to do that. And an advert came up on YouTube for a kit guitar. And I was like, I've always wanted to make a kit guitar, and it was like 80 quid or something, 80 or 90 pounds. It wasn't a fortune, right? And you get the whole guitar for that, and you put it together and you sand it down, you put the whole thing together. And I was like, well, Jesus, I want to do that. So I sent off for that. I did like six, I think it was coming from Eastern Europe, and like 6 weeks later, this guitar arrived in a
which you probably forgot you'd ordered
a little bit, and then and I didn't tell my wife, and my wife was like, what the fuck have you ordered? Like, at this stage, we didn't have any money. Like, I couldn't afford to be doing shit like that. But I was like, right, you know, because there's nothing else. At that stage, I was very, very time rich and cash poor, right? And I thought, I want something.
You are a comedian.
Yeah, exactly. Comedians, very, very time rich, cash poor. So I started building this guitar. I started watching YouTube videos about making guitars. I didn't realize how interested I would become in it. I'll tell you now, I can play a bit of guitar, but I'm fairly shit. Like, I'm not, you know, I can't really play. But I am very, so, and I'm not really, I'm kind of interested in learning how to play guitar, but not as much as I'm interested in trying to make them.
Yeah.
Now. Having made the kit guitar, I was like, I want to, I really want to learn how to make one of these from scratch. Like just like, you know, block of wood, another plank, right? Make a guitar out of that. You know what I mean? And that's what I've done over the past, I suppose, over the past 12 months, just learn how to do that. And it's been great fun. It's been great fun. Even to the extent of, I mean, I went to Loudon's, God, when was it? It would have been, was it July? Oh, maybe it was last year. I went to do the tour of Loudon's. And on a Friday, they do a tour of their little, they've got a small factory and a small little sort of thing in Downpatrick there. And they bring you around, they show you the factory. And I thought that was marvellous. And I was like, Jesus, I'd love to work here. Like I'd do anything to work here. This looks like brilliant stuff. And I didn't think anything more about it. My idea was that I was going to make a guitar from scratch, then write to them and say, I've made this guitar. Can I come and work for you? You know, even as a trainee,
yeah,
or even as an intern, I will work for you for free for 2 days a week or 3 days a week, just so I can learn. And then I was on YouTube, I was on Facebook, and on Facebook they have a Facebook page, and it came up and it said they were looking for trainee craftspeople. And I applied for that, and I didn't think I would get it. I was like, I've never done any, you know, I don't have any formal training. I haven't been a joiner or a carpenter or anything like that. So so I sent in my application at like 12, half 12 at night, and half 8 in the morning, the woman from HR, I won't say who she is, the woman from HR rang me and said, Christian, we got your application here. Can you come in for an interview tomorrow? And I was like, absolutely. So I came in, had a chat, went down to them, had a very informal sort of chat with them. Now, this was only like in start of March. So the coronavirus thing was all just sort of kicking off. And it was great, the interview. They were like, I was like, I don't really have a huge amount of, I've made a kick guitar. I'm starting to make my own guitar. And they were like, nobody here has worked. When we came here, nobody here had worked on guitars. You're fine. Like, seriously. Don't worry about that. They were like, you know, we have people from all different backgrounds. We're going to show you what to do. We'll show you how to do it. And I started work then on that was on a Friday. I started work on Monday.
Not bad.
And it's been, so then I worked for about a week. Then I was furloughed for a wee while. And then they brought us back. They brought, the factory isn't back open again. I say it's not back open again. It is open, but it's not running full production. So they only have a few of us back in, and we're sort of making workbenches and things like that. And we're getting prepped and everything. We're prepping things for people to come back. We don't know when that will be. Like every business, we don't know when that's going to be.
Yeah.
We've no idea, but it's brilliant. I love working there. It's the people are amazing. They're so nice. I love doing what I'm doing. Somebody had said to me, seriously, Darren, like 18 months, like 2 years ago, let's say we were at a comedy gig and you'd said like in 2 years time, you'll be sitting sanding guitars all day. I wouldn't have believed you. Like,
yeah, there is something nice. There's something nice and comforting though about working with your hands. Like I used to labor on places when we were building houses, and you had that nice satisfaction of someday someone's going to live in that house. That's going to be somebody's home.
You have
that now where you're building guitars. Where it's like, I know you're saying like you can't play the guitar, but neither could Leo Fender. So don't worry about that. He did all right of it. You know, he's doing okay. Or he did, I suppose, before he died. But sure. Get that great satisfaction of like all of your favorite albums. There's a guitar on there. You know what I mean? Somebody will play that and love that and maybe write their next big song on something you've worked on. That's kind of nice. It's a nice feeling.
The guitars that we're working on, the quality of the guitars, like even that's one thing you've got to be very aware of when we're working on them is. They make the best guitars in the world, acoustic guitars in the world. They just do. And the ones sort of we're working on, if you like. Everything has to be absolutely perfect on it. The attention to detail and the quality there is just unbelievable. So when you're working on it, you're working on something, you're very, very aware that somebody who's going to have this guitar has paid a lot of money for it. And when I say a lot of money, I mean, some of the guitars go from, I mean, the cheapest guitars are sort of £650.
That's not fucking around when you can buy a guitar for 60 quid, you know what I mean?
I mean, and the other ones go up to that. And then the ones we work on go from about 600 to about £1,400, 600 to about £1,400. And then in the other factory, they make the handmade, like the actual Loudon guitars. And they started something, they started about £3,000, £3,000, £4,000.
Yeah. One of my good friends, she used to play a Loudon, and I think hers was, I think it was 4,500, and she got a deal on it. You don't think you notice a difference. Like I can, like you, I play about four chords. And when you sit with, I have a guitar here, and you sit with whatever, you just bash at the chords. But when you feel a proper guitar, something that's been set up and intonation and just the neck's perfect and everything's craftsman, like when you sit and you just strum a chord, you go, fuck me, that's beautiful.
Yeah. It's like night and day. It's the difference between them. It's absolutely incredible. But I mean, I can absolutely, I mean, I've seen how they make the, you know, £4,000 guitars, and you know, it's absolutely worth, like, the amount of time and effort and attention to detail and everything that goes into one of those, and the wood, I mean the wood that they choose as well, it's very, very impressive. And it's a, you know, it's a fantastic place to work. I the factory where we work in, there's wood stocked up everywhere, you know, and some of it's just, you're looking at it going, oh my God, look at that piece of walnut. It's beautiful. Wow. Yeah. Imagine that on a guitar. Like you're seeing what's going to go on to guitars and you're going, wow, that's just beautiful. So yeah. So it's been a complete sort of a bit of a change of life, I suppose. Doing stuff with my hands and things like that I find it very sad. I find sort of making stuff very satisfying now.
Yeah, well, I'm very happy for you, because I think last time I was chatting to you, like, properly, you were just not arsed with comedy anymore. So it's nice that you have something you can go on to. I appreciate that when, like, at a time in your life when something's done and you can find something else. Like, I ended up in comedy as a field musician. So, well, I say musician, I play drums, but But in the grand scheme of things, now on lockdown, because I've got time off, I've went and bought myself an electronic kit, and it's in my living room.
Oh, cool.
I'm back playing again. And it's really nice. Now, in the modern kits, you can plug your laptop in and play along with songs. So I'm not just sitting counting to four and playing along to stuff I used to play along to. Although, weirdly enough, I tried to play along the other day to a song I recorded on and struggled.
How long ago did you record it?
About 10 years ago. And I was like, hang on, is that a triplet? How the fuck?
But it's fantastic that you have that. I think that's kind of an amazing thing that's happening now at the moment. There's people during furlough, you know, when they're not working, they're furloughing, that they're actually going back to doing things like this, where they have the time, you know, and you can go off.
Oh, it'll be back now, guys. We've lost Christian a wee bit on the signal.
It's like full of them. For the next, you know, year and a bit, you know, but apparently the demand now for guitars and things like that, just because people are staying in, you know, and people learning guitars, these guitar courses now have really taken off, online guitar courses. So it's good. I think times like this are an ideal time to sort of to get another string to your bow. I know there's a lot of pressure on people as well, though, you know, where it's like, oh, what am I going to do? You know, I have to have the garden nice, or I have to learn a new language, or I have to do this sort of stuff. But I think if there's something there already that you do want to do, it does give you the opportunity to do it. You
know? If anything, I've regressed. I've got long hair again and I'm playing drums. I'm fucking 17 again.
You're gonna form a band.
I'm relearning stuff. I'm not learning fuck all. I'm relearning stuff. My brain's just going, you don't need that anymore. And I'm like... Can't even count to four, you dickhead. Here we go. But no, it's been nice. It's something to keep you sane. And also, I can see why people do contact sports. And I do remember always being like, I'm a wee bit, definitely a bit more nervous and stressed as I'm older. I remember being between the ages of 17 and 25 when I played in a band, just not having a fucking care in the world, because twice a week I was beating the fuck out of something.
Yeah.
Same kind of thing of going out into your garage and hitting a punch bag and be like, I feel better. I would play the drums and make some noise and just, and felt great.
You need a release.
Yeah. Yoga's too quiet.
Huh?
Yoga's too quiet.
Yeah. Do you think after this then that you'll go out and form a band or something, or keep it
not,
up?
Probably not in the way that I used to, which was when I used to play music and run shows, and probably not in that aspect. I could get into a wee pub band. Same as comedy. Yeah. Any excuse to work while you're drinking, or drink while you're working, depending on how you look at it.
I do miss that. I miss the sort of, I've now, you see, the thing is, because I start work at 8 o'clock every morning. So I have to be up at like 7 to get there and everything. The factory's not too far away from me. But I've stopped drinking during the week. It's like, before this, for the 18 months beforehand, I would be like, I'll have a glass of wine or two or three. And now it's unbelievable. If I have it, I can't really drink before going, the night before going into work. The stuff that we do is just requires so much concentration. It's actually, that's you're standing on your feet all day. So you're standing at a workstation, you're working all the time. You're concentrating on something. So it's quite exhausting. Like when you come home, you're just knackered.
Yeah.
In order to be able to concentrate, I can't drink. So Fridays and Saturday nights, I'll have a few glasses of wine, but the rest of it, and the weight has fallen off.
I'd say so. You don't be long. I mean, the best shape I was in my life was when I was labouring to brickies.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I've probably lost about a stone in the last few weeks. It still needs a little bit more.
Don't worry, buddy. You're working in a factory and summer's coming. The sweat will be rolling off you.
Sweat will be rolling off us, yeah. I think it will be. Fuck yeah.
You'll be there just topless in a high viz and your mask on, the sweat pissing off you. Bandana to keep the sweat out of your eyes.
Have you ever thought about then, when you were labouring and stuff like that, have you ever thought about learning how to do, bricklaying or...
Do you know what? The offer was put to me. Somebody said, why don't you do this? And then I just thought, because I think it was probably because I was doing it because it was well paid. And we were building houses in Dublin. And my brother got the contract and we were working on two of the new health centres actually in Dublin, which are up and running now. There was one, we got to work in the really nice parts of Dublin, Coolock. And look at the face in you when I said that.
I went to school in Coolock.
Did you?
I went to Chanel, yeah.
I wasn't. Is Chanel a place or a woman that taught you?
Chanel's a school. It's in Coolock.
We built a new health centre in Coolock, but it was madness to see what it was replacing. We were building these big, massive buildings, and they're like, the old one's across the road. And I was like, that's a house.
Oh, yeah.
The old health centre. Oh, yeah. And it was...
Coolock's rough, but it's not that rough, but it's
not dangerous. Put it this way. I mean, everyone was just, anytime anybody says anywhere's rough, I'm always just like, Northern Ireland in the 80s. Okay. All right. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's fine. I'm never that worried. That guy's got a knife. Oh, okay. Well, I used to throw a guy with a gun, so we're not going to panic.
There are degrees of...
degrees of danger. I am surprised I'm not dead, where there's maybe a certain, a certain quality of blasé about things, and people are like, that's dangerous. I'm like, fuck it. So we're in Coolock, and then we did one in Summerhill as well, was the other one.
Ah.
Yeah. Now, what was funny was, the only reason that we always joke about them being rough places was because the first, when you go in, you have to obviously, get yourself signed on to the site, and you have to do the safety briefing and stuff. The first thing they told us on both sides, it wasn't, make sure you wear your hard hat, make sure you wear your glasses, make sure you wear your gloves, make sure you've got your boots on. The first thing they said was, now lads, if you see a needle, don't pick it up.
That makes sense.
And I was like, oh fuck, I was going to take it home and sell it. All right, cool. Jesus Christ. So yeah, that was funny. So I ended up doing that. And then funny enough, one of the best jobs I've ever had when I went out to Australia in 2018, I went out in September. I got 6 weeks work with a lad from Roscommon and a boy from Strabane and Tyrone. And I was labouring the two brickies on private building sites and the crack was unbelievable.
Whereabouts were you based then?
That was Melbourne.
Oh, in Melbourne?
Yeah, but I was only out to go back out because I have a cousin out there, and I was basically going out there as a base of operations to get out of Ireland for basically our winter, going into their summer.
Yeah,
and
I don't blame.
To save up some dollars and kick off on into the next adventure, which was New Zealand for a few weeks, where I had previously lived, but saw more of it this time, and then up into Southeast Asia, because I was kind of on tour. So I ended up doing a heap of gigs while traveling. And I mentioned this to Marcus Keeley.
Yeah.
Probably one of the reasons I'm still in comedy is because comedy is not my main love in life. It's something that I can do that facilitates my true love, which is travel.
Travel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I did like a tour of Southeast Asia, and promoters were flying me between the cities. I could not believe my luck.
Oh, wow.
When they were like, oh yeah, you do this. Like, I did some random gigs. I did Comedy Masala, which is a gig in Singapore. And fantastic gig. Oh, so good. And they were just like, we don't normally, the reason I got into the gig was pure bluff. The guy was like, we don't normally do gigs at this time of year because a lot of the expats who live in Singapore are still home for Christmas, but we'll just give it a go and see how it goes. I think it might be too early. And I was like, hey, look, if there's 50 people, it'll be good.
Yeah.
Thing was packed because people couldn't wait for it to come back.
And they all speak, they're all English. They all speak perfect English.
Oh yeah. People in Singapore, people in Southeast Asia in general speak much better English than you and I. It's because they've learned to speak English. They haven't been dragged up speaking it as some sort of, they don't have that colonial hangover where we're speaking English and we've just mashed it together with how we talk and the Irish language and all of those words we keep over. Like people in the South saying tree, because three never caught on. THs weren't gonna work. So speaking of,
how do you think? So obviously, at the moment, people can't perform. At the moment, where I'm interviewing you now. Where do you think it's gonna go? How?
I think I chatted to Mickey Bartlett about this. I think comedy will probably be the last thing that comes back. People will want to go to the pub, but I think it'll be very slow. People are now used to having beers in the house and stuff, so. And socializing with friends. I mean, you can have drinks. I could be having a drink with you here now, although it's 11 o'clock on Saturday morning. We'll talk later. You're having tea. People can be doing that. They don't need to go to the pub anymore. So I think the pubs are going to suffer. And then, of course, comedy clubs have bars. People go out for a night out. Like I run two monthly comedy nights. So I'll see what happens. I've won in Newry and McCooey's. And then I had actually just taken on the Sunflower Comedy Club in Belfast.
Right.
We did two of them, both sold out, but they're both small rooms that hold 50 people.
Yes.
I would much rather a small packed room than a half empty big room.
Oh, of course.
So I'm at the same point, I'll never do anything that will put anybody at risk. So we'll probably wait on whenever they say you can do gigs again, I'll probably wait another month or two to see how it's going.
Yeah.
There's no rush. It's we're okay. I've got my rainy day money and I'll be back to work probably first before that, so there's no point panicking. I'm certainly not in it for financial gain, because I make sure everybody gets paid, and I don't have like 10 minute open spots with no money. Any even if it's 20 quid, I want to give somebody something. But it might be the difference of being an act who's a promoter as opposed to a promoter who wants acts. So same with McCooey's and Yuri, everybody gets paid. I'm quite honest about it. If people do the maths, and then myself and Leanne split the money, so I give people their fee, and then so nobody can be annoyed that they've been given 80 quid and they think I'm going home with £400 because I'm fucking not.
You're not, yeah.
If it's a day's wage, I'm happy.
Yeah, it is. That's the thing. Before all of this sort of kicked off, I thought it was difficult to make money doing it. I mean, especially I would have thought I found in London and stuff like that, all the paid gigs were outside London. It was all either doing, Peterborough or, where else? Bournemouth or Plymouth, places like that. They were the ones that paid. London, very difficult to, there's plenty of gigs, but they're all sort of open mic ones. And there's just so many comedians.
Yeah, well, that was one of the things that I wanted to lead into was talking about your experience of doing that, because I think obviously with moving away years ago and stuff, I did okay at comedy in Australia. Mm. Whether I was funny or whether I had an accent is debatable, but fuck it. Getting paid work and it was keeping me, I don't give a shit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like I did tours and around mine sites, and I got a gig on Paddy's Day one year that paid me a couple of $1,000 because I was giving up my St. Patrick's Day. I actually said that jokingly, and the promoter was like, oh, I'm really sorry, I'll get you a couple extra bucks. And I was like,
yeah,
all right, you don't have sarcasm, that's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
So
in Australia, definitely they're very, I went over to the Melbourne Comedy Festival, I think that was 3 years ago now. So 2017.
Yeah. It's good crack, Melbourne. I did Melbourne 2013, and I've done Perth twice, and I've done Adelaide as well.
Yeah, I've never been to those. I've just been to Melbourne. I would like to have seen Adelaide and Perth, but I didn't get a chance. Maybe someday I'll go back. You know, I'd like to go and see them. Do you know what I mean? I didn't get to Sydney either, or just Melbourne. And I enjoyed Melbourne. I thought it was nice. I thought it was a nice city. You know.
It's handy. The way it's gridded out, if you're in the middle, you can get everywhere. You just walk everywhere. Yeah. It's great. And the trams are fantastic. It's very it's a well-designed city because it wasn't there 200 years ago. You know what I mean? It just went, here's what we're going to do.
Yeah. And you can, it is very easy to get around. It's so easy to get around.
And founded by a guy called Batman, which I thought was brilliant. So that's great.
What's this?
Yeah. Well, I say founded. He pretty much swindled the local people into giving them the land. John Batman, who was a native-born Australian, but he was born in Tasmania, sailed over to where Melbourne is now, met the Indigenous people and bought it off them. So he bought something off people who had no concept of money. So he gave them, you know, 15 blankets, 47 axe heads. I'll send you, whenever we're finished recording, I'll send you the list of what he bought Melbourne for.
Oh, do
you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm telling you now, you wouldn't buy a shed for what he paid for it now. So. But it was interesting because basically he went back to Tasmania. Yeah, back to Tasmania and said to the governor at the time, he was like, here, I've bought a city across the water there. And they were like, what? Mm-hmm. Like, I've bought a city. And they went over and took a look at it and then went to him, you know, this is Crown land. You can't actually buy anything without our say-so. So they just, that was it. And that became Melbourne. It's an interesting story.
Yeah, no, I liked it a lot.
No, but the whole going to England thing, something that I've talked to different people about doing. I was chatting to Jonathan Reagan and another guy, because he was saying, oh, you could come over and still work in London. And I was like, I don't really fancy working 6 days a week on a building site and then trying to do gigs at night time. Your body will give up on you. You need to rest and relax. Yeah. And then also chatting to a brilliant comic who runs the Southport Comedy Festival, a guy called Bren Riley. Did you ever meet Bren?
No.
Bren's been a club comic since like the mid 90s, and he was saying part of the reason they had to take into running the comedy festival themselves was one, so that acts could be properly taken care of. And I've never been taken care of like it. It was so good. I arrived, can we get you dinner? Can we get you drinks? There's a private area over there for you if you need anything. This is my number. And I was like, this is like being appreciated for what I do. This is fucking weird.
Yeah.
And then he said basically he was a club comic for years, and he said they're paying the same wages now as they were paying people 20 years ago.
Yes.
So he was like, if I did a comedy club 20 years ago and somebody gave me 300 quid, sure, fuck me, that was like getting paid 10 grand, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he was like, the wages haven't gone up, but the cost of living has. So comedians have had to either stop and get a real job or put another string in your bow kind of thing. So.
Well, I think that's the big fallacy I think in about comedy over in England is that people are making a living at it.
Are you making a living at it if your dad owns a 6-bedroom house in Sussex, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well there's plenty of that. There is plenty of that happening. But I think it's very, very difficult to make to make a living at it. I think a lot of people do have other jobs. And they just don't say. And that's the thing. That's why people sort of think, oh, well, he's doing comedy. He must be doing this full time, must be doing okay. And the fact is that on the surface, it looks like that. But it isn't. Most of them have other jobs or they have very rich parents.
Yeah.
And or they have some other way of supporting themselves. Because if you're living in London and you're just gigging in London, you're not making, unless you are a big name, you're an established name, you're not making money at it. I'm telling you now, you're not, regardless of what anybody says, not making money at it. You're just not. I mean, you can do, let's say the Bill Murray, you can do the Bill Murray and, you know, you might get a few gigs there every month. And so you do a 10 minute set there. If you do a 10 minute set there, I think it's like 20 quid, you guess. So you might guess in a month, you might get £80 off them. And that's, you know, you've got to get to fucking, you can, that doesn't, you know, you've got your travel as well. You got all of that sort of, it's just.
I was going to say, and if you do fancy a pint, it's about £7 in London. So fuck that.
I mean, that's why people try to get in. I mean, the Comedy Store will pay. The Comedy Store pays really well. But you have to be a very, very established act. And it can take you 10 years to get it to get to that level in the comedy club or the Comedy Store. And even then you might not, you know, it's very arbitrary. They might go, no, we don't like you. We don't think you're good. We don't think you're right for us. And so you never get booked for that. And then, so that there are very, very few comedy clubs that will pay good money. And even then, even if you were working at them, you know, every week, still wouldn't be a huge amount of money.
Yeah, well, I mean, I did an episode with John Maher, who's from Newry but based over in London. And John was saying that. He was like, look, I have a job 3 or 4 days a week because I live in London. You have to.
Yeah, absolutely have to. I don't know.
He's from Newry. He doesn't have the rich parents. So John's over there busting his arse and doing the gigs. And then it must be grim, though, whenever you have to do. Like, I obviously was very lucky and landed on my feet where I either went to, probably using my little punk rock experience of running shows where I know how to run a show.
Yeah.
And make sure everybody's paid and then still have enough money to justify my work. But that's over here. I wouldn't be bothered. Like, I went over to England and did 2 weeks, but that was an opening for Farmer Michael and Kathleen. They did like a little theatre tour around England. And it was great. We did like Blackpool Pier and did like the Irish Centre in Manchester. They do a couple of gigs in Liverpool every year. There's a couple of hundred people. Yeah. But that's the thing. The guys are doing better in England than they are in Ireland, and they're doing well. You know what I mean? It's full time for them. But they were saying it's mad where they have to go over and book their own stuff, because if they were relying on other people, people would say, oh yeah, we'll fill a theatre for you and then give you 500 quid. You're like, fuck off. No, it's not worth the hassle.
Oh, hang on. You've got the cut out there. So we'll give you what?
Oh, I says, you know, if people would, you know, they'll fill a theatre for you and then try and give you 500 quid.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, no, because you charge £15 a ticket. Definitely not.
The Irish Centre in Manchester is really nice.
Yeah, it's lovely. We did Chorlton. Was it
Chorlton? Chorlton.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I've played that a couple of times. That's good.
Yeah, and then did the Irish Centre down in London, which was funny as fuck, because we did the 2 nights in it. Mm-hmm. I think it was 300 a night, and then the night after we were on, the Wolf Tones were in.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I just love the idea of a load of Irish people born in London singing about Wolf Tones songs. I thought that was very entertaining to me.
Yeah, I don't know. That's the thing. I don't think there's money in comedy and in live comedy. But I don't know what the answer to it is. I don't know whether it's going online, whether people are doing like YouTube videos or podcasts or what you call it, Twitch streams or whatever. I don't know what the answer to it is. I really don't.
Well, I mean, to be honest, whether it's on lockdown or whatever, the podcast is something I've been doing since before I was locked in the house, but it's nice to have a creative outlet, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
it's another means of speaking or being heard. Or, I mean, I decided not to do a podcast where it was just me talking, because I was like, I know a lot of very cool, interesting people from my travels and from what I do. So why don't I have a chat with them? It's been fun. It's nice. I like to think that when people listen to this, if they can learn something about something they had no interest in, that's a good thing.
Before. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Even if somebody's only learned that somebody who builds a guitar is a luthier, that's it. So
yes.
Because that's gonna come up in a fucking pub quiz someday and someone's gonna go,
oh,
fucking Matthew's on his podcast, what a champion.
Yeah, I don't. I, yeah, as I said, I don't know what the thing is also, I don't know what this future is going to. I was talking to somebody else about this, but you know, Netflix and Amazon Prime and all these seem to be taking off. And it always seemed to me that everybody, you know, everybody doing comedy or doing stand-up, the end game was to try and get on television, was to try and, you know, get a profile on that, whether it's at Live at the Apollo or Mock the Week or those sort of things. And I'm not so sure now. That's the thing. I don't know where that's. I don't even know where terrestrial television is going to. Sort of in the next 5 years, will the BBC be the same thing? Will Channel 4 be the same thing? Because they just don't seem to be making as much comedy anymore. You know, it all seems to be Netflix are making comedy specials, okay. I think Amazon Prime have started to make some comedy, you know, stand-up comedy specials.
Basically, the money for them is in reality TV. I have a buddy who works in TV production, and he would have worked on Game of Thrones, and he works on major motion picture. All that kind of stuff. But basically, reality TV is cheap.
That's very cheap.
They're not TV stations that need to generate revenue and stuff. They're like, we're not going to make the next, you know, drama where we have to pay a script writer and we have to pay a director. We're just going to give two lads a camera and tell them to follow some dickhead, and we're going to get a nationwide success out of this.
Yeah.
Stuff like Big Brother was probably the prototype for that, which was, as Billy Connolly said, people sitting in a house watching people sitting in a house. Gogglebox is the same.
Yeah, I think that's the way television is going. That is what terrestrial television is at the moment.
Yeah,
and it's only the places like Netflix and Amazon Prime that are making these sort of. I mean, that's the sort of stuff I watch all the time. I don't have Sky or anything like that anymore. It's funny, like, I can't remember the last sitcom that was made. Can you? Can you remember the last? I mean, even Afterlife is a sitcom, and that was on Netflix. But
yeah.
When was the last time the BBC or Channel 4 made a sitcom, you know? It's odd. I don't know if they're ever going to go back to that, if they're going to ever going to have the money to go back to that. So,
maybe I had this may have been a naive viewpoint of mine, but I would always thought that if I could get on the, or if I was given the opportunity to do some TV work or Live at the Apollo or something, I would only really want that so that people could see me and then come see me live. Cause I love performing live. I'm not arsed if somebody watches me on TV.
Yeah.
I don't get any of my personal joy. If I really liked that, and it was nice making those people feel happy for an hour, you know what I mean? I don't get that from
being Nazi. But I think that's why people wanted to get on to Live the Apollo and those sort of things. Is so they built up, people go, oh, it's that guy, and then they'll go along and see them.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking more so, as opposed to I've been on TV. I'm just like,
yeah, there just doesn't. They're not making that sort of stuff anymore. So I don't know what I don't know whether. You know, are people going to start making their own little sitcom? You know, because you can film anything now. I mean, everybody has a phone.
Yeah.
And they've filmed movies on phones. I can't, you know, maybe people will start making their own filming their own sitcoms and putting them on YouTube or sort of stuff. People, you know, I'm surprised that people haven't started doing that yet. People are so, or maybe they have, maybe you just haven't seen them. That's sort of, you know, that people will circumvent, you know, the traditional sort of routes and put and get their stuff out there, you know.
I think Steven Soderbergh made a movie just on a phone.
I think he did, yeah.
Yeah, you're just like, right.
Yeah. But, okay, it's probably a very good phone.
do you know what? It was probably used as an advert for the phone. That's what it was. Yeah. shot in an iPhone, was it? Did you get that free, did you? Bastard. But,
what about the restaurant? So you're furloughed at the moment from the restaurant.
Yeah, the restaurant itself is actually back doing, you know, like collection. So the delivery collection, and people can order stuff. But I am high risk because of my shitty asthma. So
I understand.
I got offered to go back, and I was thinking about it because I was a bit fucking bored. And then basically anyone I said it to told me to stop being a fucking idiot. So
yeah.
They're like, you really want to go and risk your fucking life so somebody can get a burger? Calm yourself. Like.
Yeah. It's the same way. Gail used to work at Brunel's in Newcastle here in the evenings, some evenings and weekends. They've shut down as well, unfortunately. And so pain in the arse. That's one thing I kind of really miss is going out the odd time for a, you know, steak sandwich.
Yeah, I'm missing just that social interaction of. Do you know what? I'm trying to think of the last time I went to something like a pub would have been get a bit of food, have a couple of pints. I'm probably maybe a wee bit older to be like, I'm not going to go to the pub and get blocked. That's not for me anymore.
No.
Kind of like, or I would go to the pub with my brother and we would watch football, you know what I mean? So you're there for a set time.
Yes.
And you'd have your two or three pints. I'm all about the beer buzz these days as opposed to the too much beer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I'm also...
That's like I'm 47. I can't remember the last... Oh no, hang on. I tell a lie. When was it? A few weeks ago, I think I was pissed. But it didn't take very much.
Yeah. The start of March. Start of March, my cousin's wedding, which was over in England. And we weren't sure if we were even going to be able to, you know, not if we were going to go, but should we go? And then he was saying that a couple of his mates were supposed to go and they dropped out. And I went, well, look, if this is going to be the last hurrah, let's make it the fucking last hurrah. And that was a foolish thing to do because I showed one of the young English bar staff how to pour a proper pint of Guinness. And then he was my best mate. And then when I went up and started drinking whiskey, as I do towards the end of the evening, he was free pouring them. Yeah. So I was the state of me the next day. Couldn't keep down water. You know that? I haven't had one of them in a long time.
Long, long time.
Yeah, it was not worth it. But obviously being a white male in my 30s, I'm big into my craft beer these days, so that's fine. So you can have two of them and you're half pissed because they're fucking 6 or 7%.
Yeah. So what do you think? So hopefully they'll tomorrow it'll be that this is Saturday, so tomorrow I think they're talking about relaxing some of the rules or that sort of thing. It'll be interesting to see what happens, whether we're allowed to see people or
people. I had to go down. This is just the kind of strange times we live in. My sister-in-law, her grandmother passed away, and lovely lady who was actually lived across the road from us where I'm from. So I went down home. And we all sort of socially did, because we couldn't go to the chapel and you couldn't go to the burial. So all we could do was like line the road as the hearse went past. It was so surreal. So we were there and we were all socially distanced out of the houses. So like my auntie came down, who knows her, and she was up at the top of the garden. Mum was down at the gate. I was outside the front of the house. It was the strangest thing. And then I was saying to my mum, I'm going to go up the road and going to head up the road and get some food. Because I got up late and just drove down the road and she went, do you want some breakfast? I went, I can't have breakfast. I can't come into your house. And she was like, I'll leave it at the back door for you.
Spotty dog.
Result. So my mom made me breakfast and I ate it out the back on the garden furniture with a cup of tea.
Oh man.
Yeah. So it didn't break social restrictions. I'd get a fry out of it.
It's my mom's 70th on Monday.
Ah, shite.
And yeah, so she was supposed to go away on holiday. We bought a holiday for her, and she hasn't got a chance to go away. But I don't know if I'm going to get to see her. I think the restrictions are loosening. Sort of, it was today. I think they were starting to loosen. But the thing is, like I said, I need to go down, and I've got some screen printing screens that were delivered. They wouldn't deliver them to Northern Ireland for some reason from Belgium. So they're in my parents' house in Dublin. So I've got to go and pick them up at some stage. So I keep threatening that. Apparently they're stopping people on the border though. Apparently, because I said the other night, I said, oh, maybe I'll just get in the car, I'll bomb down. You know, she can leave them at the door, and I'll go and pick them up, and then I'll drive back up, and nobody will be any the wiser. But apparently they are stopping people at the. They were stopping people on the border. The Gardaí and the Northern Irish Police were stopping. See, asking people where they were coming, you know.
That's quite funny as well, seeing as that was exactly your scene when you did soft border patrol for BBC.
Yes, isn't it?
Life imitates art.
So I'll have to try and get out, because I said to my mom, I'll come down and do it, and she goes, oh, I'll hand you out a cup of tea out the window.
Yeah.
Before you go back up. Talk to each other out the window. So hopefully I think the rules are kind of relaxed down there, and we'll see what Boris has to say tomorrow.
Well, I can put this funny story on the podcast, because this is something that happened to me yesterday where I worry about people and their social distancing. I moved in to a new house in the middle of all this. So I got a house in Finihy in South Belfast.
I love Finihy. I lived there for a bit.
Yeah, or Finicky, if you're from here. Because yesterday was VE Day, I moved into the estate and I didn't realise. A lot of the neighbours started putting up their flags and their bunting.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, grand. And I was like, let them at it. Have your day, boys. And then we were doing the dinner and the door knocked. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, who that is? And I went out and I could see through the frosted glass a Union Jack t-shirt. And I was like, oh, Jesus. I'm only in 2 weeks.
You were like opening the door. Who are you? I'm Mervyn. Mervyn.
No, name. I wasn't even annoyed. It was very funny because I just sort of opened the door and I was like, hello. And the lady was like, here, we're just sort of having a bit of a party. And I was like, shouldn't be doing that, all right. But they were obviously all sort of keeping away from each other across the square, you know, shouting over to their neighbours. So she was like, if you want, like, we haven't met the new neighbours yet, if you want to come over. And I was like, we're actually just about to have dinner, but I'll get out for a half an hour to beer later on. And she was just like, just to welcome you in the neighbor. And then, and also, like, it doesn't matter what color you are. And I was like, you've obviously took one look at the head in me. Yeah, so I think she smelled the mass off me. And then
smell of communion off you.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, I'll go out for an hour. So I went to disguise myself, actually. So what I did was I have like a brand new Nirvana t-shirt. Like it's an orange Nirvana t-shirt with the white logo. So I was just like, I thought it was funny because I'm from Armagh. And so I sent my brother a photo of me in the t-shirt saying, finally combined my two loves of county football and rock and roll. But I put that on me and then I realized I was wearing the t-shirt and then my green Adidas trainers. I went, I looked like a fucking tricolor. So
you looked like a tricolor. You couldn't stick out anymore.
Exactly. But I put the white t-shirt on and the blue jeans on and they put my red my red Adidas zip up on. So now I look like a Union Jack.
I couldn't believe it yesterday. We went up to get some wine. And I know you're only supposed to travel for essentials, but wine's essential. But they've run out of the wine that I like in my local off license. I'm not gonna try and say that it's because of me, but I certainly had a lot to do with it. But anyway,
is it because of you or because it's £4 a bottle?
I think it's a mixture of both. So they had the stuff that I like out in Kilkeel. So we drove to Kilkeel yesterday, and my God, they like their flags, don't they?
Yeah,
there was flags everywhere. There was flags on everything, like outside the houses, on cars. They had little flags, little Union Jack flags on the cars. I was surprised that there wasn't birds flying with fucking Union Jacks on them.
Information.
Like,
what smoke off the back?
Like the red arrow.
Yeah.
So there you go. That was an eye opener. And I didn't realize it was the. It never occurred to me. I just thought, God, they like their flags in there.
Starting early, getting ready for summer. First sign of the sun. Get them flags up the fuck. But it's funny as well because yesterday was the 75th anniversary of VE Day.
That's right.
With the end of World War II in Europe. If you're listening to this abroad and you don't know what that is. And it's funny as well because you're from Dublin where it wasn't called World War II. I love this. What was it called in
the emergency. South of Ireland?
The emergency. Class.
Emergency.
Just.
I wasn't even alive. That's the thing. When you think about it, I was just saying, like, my mom was 70 on Monday. She wasn't even born at the end of the war, you know, by. That's fucking, you know, and there's still sort of, there's people yesterday on, I was looking like politicians and stuff on Twitter and stuff going, oh, you know, well, let's get out there and celebrate. It's like, you weren't born, what are you celebrating? What the fuck? It's just ridiculous. It's just, it doesn't make any sense.
I always find it really funny whenever, obviously, with how nationalism works and people are just like, that time we won the war. And I always used to have a joke about it. And I would say it to people sometimes just for my own amusement where people would go, that time, you know, when Americans joke and say stuff like, if it wasn't for us, you'd all be speaking German. And I feel like saying, actually, if it wasn't for the Soviet Union, we'd all be speaking German.
Sure. Yeah, if anything, they're the ones. How many million?
26 million or something. It was fucking madness.
amazing amount.
Quite lit. What did they say about something that when they got the Stalingrad? They said, we will choke them with our dead. And by fuck, they did.
They did.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
It was mad. So the big celebration was on yesterday. So I went over to meet the neighbours and they were all actually lovely. But it was funny because everybody kept saying to me, doesn't matter what colour you are. And I was like, right, lads, so settle down here. I don't give a fuck. It's fine.
But also, Finnehy is quite, I would have thought, is a bit more mixed now, isn't it?
It is mixed because there's Finnehy.
It was kind of mixed.
It's a crossroads. You take a right and you go to West. Oh, sorry, Finnehy's a crossroads. So you come up the Lisbon Road and you go right over to West Belfast and you go left down towards Tarkmona. And yeah. I think it's very, very funny that the traditionally seen as the sort of more loyalist unionist part of Finnehy has an Irish name. That's fucking brilliant.
Yeah. But it was that's where I used to. It was up towards Tarkmona that we had a house there. Myself and Gavin had a house for a year.
Yeah. No, it's nice. It's a lovely area, man. Everything's close by. I can get into the city in 20 minutes. It's lovely. And if I have to drive down home, it's 40 minutes. Oh, well, I keep dropping into the signal.
Again, dude.
You're okay. I didn't say anything. I was just filling the dead air till you came back. But
at Lisburn Road.
I work on the Lisbon Road, yeah. So it's not a million miles away.
No, you're grand.
No, but from your experience, so I mean, I can maybe wrap the thing up. If you're now building guitars from something that initially came from writing The Life of Sharks, which came from another revenue stream of comedy, which you no longer believe you can make money from.
Yes. That's the thing. You never know how something is going to. That just shows you. I met Sophie in Melbourne at the Melbourne Comedy Festival. That's how I met Sophie. One night we were in Tuxedo Cat, and got hammered drunk and just got and became friends and stayed friends. And then I didn't even know that she could draw. I had no idea. I went and had, I was doing a gig in downstairs at the King's Head, and she lives around the corner. She lives in Crouch End. We had dinner beforehand, and she took out a notebook. She had just gotten a promotion in work, and she was telling me about that. She wanted to show me something in her bag. Anyway, she took out her notebook. And I like a notebook, like a good notebook. So I said, can I have a look at your notebook? Is there anything in there, you know? And she was like, no, it's just me doodling, you know? And she opened it up and it was just, she had drawn stuff. And I was like, Jesus, because I had been trying to find somebody to draw these shark things before. And I said, can you draw a shark? And she goes, I'm pretty sure I can. And so I sent her one of the cartoons then that night. And then the next morning, I flew home. And when I got home in the afternoon, she had sent through the cartoon. She says, this is the sort of thing you want. And I was like, oh, perfect. That's exactly what I want. And I put it up online and it fucking took off. I think that got like 8 million views or something like that. Or just kept going up and up and up and up during the day, like the day and then the next day. And it was just like, and then there was people saying, Jesus, people are showing me this cartoon that you've done. So it's all just luck. It's all just luck. It's luck that I met her in Melbourne. It's luck that I discovered she could draw. It's luck then that the first cartoon took off, and then that we were able to, you know, making merch and stuff like that, and that led me on to. It's weird how life works. Very, very weird how life works.
I think as well. Obviously, now you're making a fortune from all those internet dollars. So well done you.
Like fuck I am.
You're like, do you think I'd be working in a fucking factory if I was making money? Exactly.
Well, you see, the thing is, before I started working at Loudon's, I was solely sort of dependent on Shark's revenue, on the revenue coming in from that. And it's not earning, now don't get me wrong, we weren't earning a fortune from it, but we were doing okay. I mean, I would maybe have about 3 or 4, maybe 5 orders every day.
Yeah.
So it was ticking along. It was making, it was paying some of the bills. I won't, you know, and it was keeping me busy and stuff like that. But it got to the point where I was only spending an hour, maybe a day, making this. Like, I've gotten it down to, you know, before it would have taken me to do a t-shirt and stuff like that, it would have taken me a longer time. Now I have it down to a fine art. I can knock out a t-shirt and, you know, in 3 minutes, 4 minutes, you know, and just put it on the thing, get the screen, and it's done, you know. So nowadays, the making, the doing the merch and packing it up and doing all that is an hour out of my day every day, which needs an awful lot of other time to fucking fill. So I thought to myself, well, that's why the idea of working in Loudoun's was very attractive. It's like, well, I can thing I can do, and then I get, you know, I finish up at 4:30. I'm home for 5 o'clock. I do all my orders for an hour, and then I sit and have my tea and fall asleep.
Not so bad, is it?
It's not bad. It's all right.
I think as you get older, everybody just wants life to be simpler. You just want it, fuck it, right? Let's just keep this as fucking easy as I can get it.
Yeah. Well, there's certain things I miss being, I don't know if I miss comedy, how much I miss comedy. I kind of miss being on stage. I miss London sometimes. I like being in London. And then there's other times I'm like, oh, I'm glad I'm not in London. I don't miss the travel. I certainly don't miss being on a train at fucking 20 past midnight from, you know, from Peterborough back into London. You know, I don't miss that sort of shit, or having to, you know, car share with three comedians fucking to Plymouth and then spend the night in a B&B. That's, you know, you do have some fun times, don't get me wrong, but it's just the thought of that now. It's like, fucking hell, like, would you really want to be in a car 6 hours each way, you know, talking about open mics?
hang on a second. You're talking to a man who once did a tour of mine sites in the Australian Outback. Now, I don't know if you know anything about the Outback, but if you run out of conversation with the comedians and decide to stare out the window, there is nothing to fucking see.
Nothing.
So you're doing all right. At least the occasional time you go, oh, services.
Absolutely amazing. Do you know what absolutely amazed me, Darren? When I flew home from Melbourne, and I was flying back to Kuala Lumpur, and you can see on the thing like where you are, you know.
Your map's global position, yeah. The
5 hours. Bang, and it's 5 hours, and you're looking out the window, and there's. Can you see me? Can you hear me?
Yeah, no, I was just saying how many hours you were between everything. It's fucking.
Oh, yeah. So it's like five. So after 5 hours, you're like, and I'm looking out the window, and there's nothing underneath. It's just fucking desert. It's just barren. And so at 5 hours later, you're still over Australia. Like, you're flying from Melbourne up, and after 5 hours of desolation, you're still over Australia. That was mind blowing. It's like, there's so much of it and there's nothing in it.
Yeah. And yet they'll tell you that they're full, which is brilliant.
I think it must be one of the like least densely populated places in the world.
Oh, it's absolutely. It's in Canada, I think, are the two. Yeah, there's the two least. And Canada's the second biggest country in the world, so it's fucking madness. But
they live around the edge, and there's nothing in the fucking middle.
Yeah, I'll just drop a wee fun fact with you before you go, because you said you flew from Melbourne up to Kuala Lumpur. I gigged in Kuala Lumpur. Do you know what the comedy club there is called? Guess.
But what it's called?
What's it called in Kuala Lumpur? Do you know what the comedy club's called?
Oh, shit, hang on. I used to know that. Is it something about juice or something like that? Is it comedy juice? No.
No, the Crack House.
Oh, the Crack House. Oh, fuck, right.
Yeah, the Crack House comedy.
I talked to somebody at that. I talked to somebody at that about stopping it, but I had like a 2 or 3 hour layover. I wasn't staying. But yeah, and they were, and I think they pay quite well as well, the one in Kuala Lumpur.
Yeah, well, I mean, for when you're on your travels, they're great. I got a night in a hotel, they flew me in, and, well, no, I actually chose to take the bus from Singapore, thinking I would see loads of stuff, and it's just a straight fucking motorway the whole way up. Idiot. I was like, this will be brilliant. It'll be like, you know, because I've been on those like 8-hour bus drives through Vietnam, and you see loads, not in fucking Malaysia, Singapore, straight up the road.
Yeah.
But... funnily enough, when I was over there, I met a lovely comedian who's from here. We are from just outside Belfast, called Niamh Spurr. She moved out there initially to work, and she ended up doing comedy out there.
In Kuala Lumpur?
Yeah. So somebody said to me, oh, we have another Irish comedian here. We'll take you to meet her for a drink. And I was like, oh, fuck, here we go. Some American pretending to be Irish. No.
Yeah.
Niamh was like, hey.
Hey, how's it going? What's the crack?
So just random of the... Of
she
the
still live there then?
Yeah, her and the fiance both work out there, so it was
wow.
It was just random, the most random adventures, and that was one of the things I liked about comedy. So a lot of the stuff you don't like about comedy, I like, but maybe because I'm not in England where there's only fucking motorways and service stations, I was a bit more.
Oh no, don't get me wrong. I miss sort of going to places like I've gigged in Budapest and Trondheim, Norway. Where else was I? Malmo, Copenhagen.
I think that's my next thing. I definitely want to do more of Scandinavia because I've only been to Denmark. I've never been up to
Scandinavia's really good, yeah. But I've been around all those sort of places. Luxembourg, I did a gig in Luxembourg and then in The Hague and Amsterdam. And so I miss sort of seeing, that was nice. I don't know if I would want to go back. Oh, I wouldn't mind going back to Budapest, actually. That was great.
Yeah,
but the others have sort of seen them, and I was like, "Yeah, this is good." Like I enjoyed it. It was fun. So I do miss that part of it. I never gigged in France. I never gigged in Spain. Or I'd like to have maybe done some of those. That would have been nice to. Or maybe it wouldn't have been. Maybe it would have been awful. But you never know.
That's why I didn't say you were a retired comedian, because you're still putting up stuff online and you still can't help yourself on your Facebook. So I'm like, that's a fucking bit. He's writing a bit there. So, I know what you're up to, Talbot. I can see you. I know what you're doing.
No, maybe. Who knows? I might get the itch in another year or so. Who knows?
Yeah, but
maybe see me back at what you call it, Pav.
Fair enough. Well, you know what? If you ever get bored, you're more than welcome to come down to Newry. We have a monthly club, but you can jump up and you can bring a carry out. So it's perfect. It'll suit you lovely.
Maybe come down and watch first.
Come down and watch first. And then when you get the cold sweats, decide you don't want it.
Come down and watch and say, oh, I would enjoy that. Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
We're all back out of lockdown.
Yeah, well, hopefully so. We have to keep fucking enthusiastic about what we're going to be able to do. But, right, well, let's try and get you a bit of fucking awareness for keeping them bills paid. If people want to check out your Sharks material, or where do we find the books and the merch and all that stuff?
You can find, we're on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram at The Life of Sharks. And we've got a website at thelifeofsharks.com, which has all of our merch and stuff on it. And that's basically it.
Sweet.
You can buy the book on Amazon as well. We've got a paperback that's on Amazon. So.
Cool. Well, I'm going to go order something now as a thank you for coming on the
you're podcast. Very nice. No, you don't have to do that. I'll send you something anyway.
No. Actually, I'll order something and then send me two things.
All right.
I'll meet you in the middle.
All right. Yeah.
Now, just to make sure that you make more than a fucking pound off it, you know what I mean? I don't want to be taking the food out of your mouth.
If you ever want any merch made, let me know.
Fucking right. What merch am I going to talk to?
I'm making something at the minute. I won't say what it is in case he doesn't want me to say. For Conor McGinley at the minute.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So get him on, talk to him. He'll be interesting.
Yeah. Okay, McGinley. I'm trying
to remember what he. Sorry, go on.
Oh, no. I was going to say, I have been chatting to McGinley about getting him on, but it's just trying to record everybody in the backlog and then get it posted up. So sticking up maybe one or two a week.
Yeah. I just looked at his Instagram there this morning. He's after breaking his toe. Broke his toe on a bike.
I was going to say, I'm not going to ask why or what he's done to himself, but okay, that sounds about right.
Bike. Oh, yeah, it's the most, you would think, yeah, what's he been up to?
Yeah.
Yeah, bicycle. Here you go.
See, there's something you miss from comedy. All the interesting characters that you meet.
All the interesting characters.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think sometimes comedians an undiagnosed mental condition?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think that's the thing.
Oh, this connection's starting to get annoying now.
Everybody please laugh, everybody please like me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm a middle child. What's your excuse? Back. You know what I mean?
I'm the eldest child, is my excuse.
Jesus Christ.
Not enough attention.
No attention. Right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to let this man go back to Santa Guitars. I'm assuming you're still building your own, are you? Or have you finished that one?
I'm building a few at the moment. So I'm building three. So there's one of them which is near finished, and I'm just waiting on some bits to arrive for it so I can finish it. And now I'm just starting on another one now today, which I have all the bits for, so it should be able to motor on with that. It should be finished it maybe by middle of the week, and it's nice. It's got a walnut top.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, if I ever get enough money that I can request a guitar, I'll get on and hassle you for it.
Alrighty. Yeah,
but okay.
Well, that's lovely chatting to you.
Yes, you too, sir. Thank you very much for eventually got you on, because I've been trying to do this for a long time. But
I know, I'm sorry. I keep having to postpone because I've just been things keep coming up. And
it's okay. You're anyway, an old man. Nice. You need your rest. Don't worry about it.
Next time I won't have you up so early to chat to me.
Oh, fuck me, it's 11 o'clock in the day. That's disgusting. I should have been up and probably done the stuff I said I was going to do, but we'll get on to that one now. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you've enjoyed the podcast, like, share, and subscribe. And do please check out The Life of Sharks, which is available on Twitter. Have you got the Instagram as well? You on the Instagram?
Instagram and Facebook, yeah.
There you go. So, Life of Sharks. Just give it a Google and you'll have all the options of where to find this stuff. Get on, get yourself a lovely book or one of the very nice stylized t-shirts, and which now we know is handmade by the creator, so that's pretty fucking cool.
Absolutely, all made by me in my garage.
Dead on as well. It's always nice to see somebody not, you know, making fucking poor Cambodian children make their t-shirts for them. Thanks very much. So, Christian, thank you very much for coming on and chatting to me, and I will chat to you soon, buddy, all right?
Yes, indeed. All right, thanks all right. Very much, Darren.
No problem, buddy. Take care.
See you soon. Bye.